The Manila Method Podcast is a production by Logan Allen and me, Barry Harris. Earlier this week, we released part one of our album discussion episode on the 1980 Barry Manilow studio album, Barry. If you haven't had a chance to watch or listen to it yet, you could go back and check it out right now. That discussion ran long, so here now is part two of our conversation.
Here we go. We're coming out on side two with an absolutely beautiful track. This is track six. It's entitled Life Will Go On. It was written by John Bettis and Richard Kerr. Check that out. Richard Kerr was a writer on Dance Away. He's a writer on Life Will Go On as well. This song is a beauty. In fact, the last time I think he played this in concert, or at least the last time that I've seen record of, was in 2000. He was doing a little mini run at the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas, and he threw this song in the set one night. And this show actually aired on Manilow TV, which, at this point, if you don't know what it is, that is the subscription service. It's $10 a month. You watch a bunch of Barry Manilow concerts every month. We're both subscribed. You should get it, too, if you're a Barry Manilow fan. Anyway, this concert from 2000 has aired on Manilow TV, where he has performed Life Will Go On, and he introduces it by saying that it should have been a hit. It's here on the hype sticker. It's listed as a new Barry Manilow standard. Him saying it should have been a hit, I totally agree. I love this song so much. The only thing I will say about this song, I remember the first time that my mom ever heard it, or we ever listened to it together. It was actually that show on Manilow TV in Las Vegas where we listened to it. She said that the melody was a little hard to follow in certain places because it does kind of jump around, pitch-wise, range-wise. It jumps around a bit because it's the whole, go on and cry till you run dry, it's all right. It's like the phrases don't resolve as well as you think they're going to. I think that might be the one thing that maybe, you know, blocked it from resonating with some people. Obviously, I think this is a huge fan favorite. I've heard of a lot of, you know, hardcore fanalos like Barry and I really compliment this song and just speak on its beauty. So, Barry, how do you feel about this track?
Yeah, I'm really in love with this with a lot of other fans. This was this should have been a hit. It could have been a hit. And I don't know if it ever was seriously released as a single, so I don't know if it was ever given that opportunity. But it's just, I love the way this song has a modulation where it repeats the chorus at the end and changes and moves the key up a whole tone. And obviously that's such a classic arrangement technique to lift the song for it. I think this may be such a fantastic example of using that modulation for hitting this final chorus in a way that really cuts through your heart. And one of the things I notice harmonically about this that I like is it plays a lot with the dominant motions. And for anybody that is not like a musical expert, I'll always say dominant motion is the foundation to music from classical music on through the present. It's always, you know, if you have a key like the key of C, if you have the fifth chord, which is the dominant, it usually resolves to the one chord. That tendency is going to rule pop music forever. That tendency that when you're on that dominant chord, you want to hit that, you want to go to the one. But in this case, what it does, it starts with the one chord, and then it moves that one chord and gives it a dominant seven. And that resolves down to the four. So it's just that, I love that way of playing with expectations. You're on the one chord, but now it suddenly becomes a dominant chord, then it goes to the fourth. And again, this is just this is highly technical speak, but it's that kind of thing that kind of excites me whenever I'm listening to music, and it's done in such an effective way. But I love how this expresses that heartbreak. It almost gives you, it's kind of similar, it's a companion to Lonely Together, to say it's okay to be miserable, it's okay to not feel great. That's okay, and that's the real message of this song. And I bet this has been a cathartic listen to so many people going through romantic difficulties. I'm sure this is the perfect song to put on and really feel all the feels.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up, it's the same feeling as Lonely Together. Lonely Together starts side one, Life Will Go On starts side two, so it's almost like they were trying to mirror the same effect with that. I wanted to mention one thing about that chord progression that you said you liked. He, in a way, inverts it between the verse part and the chorus part, because the intro has the one chord, and like you said, it's got that dominant thing. I'm sorry for all the non-musicians watching this. This is going to be like 30 seconds of nonsense to you, but it's got the one chord here, and then the one chord stays in the right hand, but it switches to the dominant in the left hand. But then in the chorus, like you just played an example of, he hits the one chord, but then in the left hand this time it stays on the one chord, and he moves to the dominant in the right hand. So it's like he flip-flops that idea in different sections, which I think is just a masterclass in how to use similar concepts but have them sound completely different.
That's so cool. And that's, again, that's why we always keep coming back to the Manilow discography, because there's always something really interesting to mine out of pretty much any song in the discography, and this song is obviously no exception.
This has been one of my I'm telling you, every time I think of this album, like we said, people think I Made It Through the Rain, the singles. But when I think of this album, I think of this song. Like, this is just such a beauty, and I don't think it got the recognition that it deserved. I honestly think it could deserve a comeback if it wasn't so hard to sing. It was recorded in this key, and then it comes up here, which is hard for anybody. Now, or I say now, 25 years ago when we last know that he played it, he did it a whole step down. And then it ended in the original key, which might be a little easier to manage, but it's still a very hard song to sing. So let's move on here, if that's all right. Here we go. We're going to move on to a very... I just like almost knocked everything over. We're going to move on to a very interesting track here. Track 7, Only in Chicago, written by Barry Manilow, and drum roll, Maurice White. From Earth, Wind, and Fire. Barry, what's going on here?
Well, that's kind of what I'm looking to explore here, because I've mentioned this to people that I'll say that are very familiar with Manilow, and this shocked them when I said, did you ever hear the song that Barry Manilow did with Maurice White? And they said, no. And so it fascinates me. So what we found in looking at the credits, it's very specific. It says the music is by Maurice White and Barry Manilow, and the lyrics are by Barry Manilow. So that's already a hint as to what happened. And in taking this song and breaking it down, I have a guess as to what I think happened.
Put on the hat.
Yes. I do not believe that Maurice White and Barry Manilow sat down in a room to compose this song together. They may have, but I've never heard that spoken about. That would be an interesting question to ask, but I'm assuming that they did not. What I think happened is the verse melody, I think, originated from Maurice White. It could have been a demo that he made that didn't have any words and was just simply solicited to Manilow to see if he wanted to work on it and finish it off. Because when we get to that bridge, all these modulations, you You know, I think that part of it, the bridge, was Manilow's doing. I think he composed that part of it, but that verse, but I can't go back, because I went back to find out what we did wrong. And I think Maurice White, I believe he probably wrote that melody. Manilow put the lyrics to it, and then came up with that bridge. Oh, like in Chicago, love is in the air. That sounds very Manilow-esque, and so I'm willing to put my money on that's what happened. So without any additional information, that's what I'm going to assume.
So if you are watching this and you somehow have information as to Maurice White's involvement, maybe they did sit down in a room. Were you there? Like, let us know in our email, please. Again, just let us know anything and everything in our email address. So, something I wanted to talk about up to this point on the record, this is certainly the wackiest arrangement.
Yeah,
up to this
it's really,
point.
Really, really wacky.
And coming out of Life Will Go On, a song that is kind of reminiscent of, like, Even Now, like, you know, the classic Manilow sound. You come into this, you're starting out with this, like, honky-tonk sounded piano line. And going into, all, like you said, all these modulations that are happening, all these key changes just for a couple seconds, it's like, what just happened? This it kind of comes out of nowhere, and honestly, I don't mind it. This is actually one of my favorite deeper tracks on this album, just because it is so out of left field. So that's all I have to talk about.
I want to mention, too, that tack piano that you hear, that is Paul Schaefer playing that.
Yes, it is.
And the reason that is particularly notable is that it actually throws back to an earlier track from This One's For You, Jump, Shout, Boogie.
Yes.
Paul Schaefer plays the lead piano part on that particular record, as he does on this. So
the
I
classic.
Just thought that was an interesting parallel. Oh, yes. So so Paul Schaefer providing some great piano licks on Manilow Records. I'm all for that.
I totally am, too. And I'm so excited to see any other moments where he sneaks in where we don't realize it. All right. So now, speaking of wacky songs, I'm not sure you can get much wackier than this next one. This is a very interesting track for those of you who have heard it. If you haven't heard it, just do it. This is track 8, The Last Duet, featuring Lily Tomlin as a guest vocalist. This was written by, like, the Dream Team at the time. This was Barry Manilow, Bruce Sussman, and Jack Feldman. This is such a departure from everything Manilow has done up to this point. I would consider this borderline a comedy routine. Barry, what are your thoughts on this very unique duet?
Yes, unique is a great word to describe it, because, again, this is a part where I was talking at the very beginning of this episode about taking a left turn. This is probably one of the biggest left turns where your expectations of what you think is going to happen does not happen, because I think, let's start with the title, The Last Duet. The irony here is that this was Barry Manilow's first commercially released duet. And to set the backdrop of what's going on in 1970, there was an absolute explosion of duets being recorded. They were so popular, and they would run up to the top of the charts, and they would stay there for weeks and weeks and weeks. From, you know, You Don't Bring Me Flowers by Neil Diamond and Barbra Streisand, No More Tears, Enough Is Enough by Donna Summer and Barbra Streisand. Barbra Streisand was actually the queen of duets. She did a lot of duets in the day. But there's also Don't Go Breaking My Heart by Elton John and Kiki D, You're the One That I Want. And all these titles I just named, they are somehow referenced in this song. So this is a little bit of a parody of those duets by taking what would be a romantic love song and basically turning it into a hilarious breakup song. And so they're taking the whole form of the duet and inverting it on its head. But musically, everything that's going on underneath it, this orchestration, is just absolutely hot. And to me, that's what makes it so funny, is that the music and even the performance is delivered deadpan and serious, that's what makes it so funny, because it's done so seriously. And yeah, this track, the more I listen to it, and I've actually now since gone on and played this for friends and other people, and they are just as fascinated by it, because there's nothing like this. Nobody dared to really make a commentary. And I could only imagine, and I'm curious to know what kind of pressure Manilow was under to deliver a commercial duet smash. And we know for a fact, that this is something we know to be true, that there were attempts at duets in the past. When they were making the This One's For You album, they decided to attempt a medley of My Girl, the Motown cover of Motown song, into No One in This World, which was an original song by Manilow, to sing it with Melissa Manchester. That was recorded. And also, we know that on the Dionne Warwick album that Barry Manilow had previously produced, but right before this album came out, that Dionne and Barry recorded a duet. They took a song that had come from the Lady Flash album called Never Gonna Let You Get Away. They recorded it as a duet, and it was not released on the album. So it's not for lack of trying. There were attempts, and for whatever reason, it just never was released. And like I said, I think perhaps there was a lot of pressure and then a lot of expectations as to which artist would sing that duet with him. But to make it Lily Tomlin and to do this, I think was just brilliant, to send everybody's expectations out the window. And again, this is why I think we respect Manilow as an artist, because he will play with the expectations that you have and won't deliver what you think he's going to deliver, and he's going to deliver something completely different.
I think it would be interesting to find out. This was written by, you know, the Copacabana team, Manilow, Sussman, Feldman. Which one of them had the original idea to do this? Like you said, kind of the parody of the top hit duets of the recent years at the time. Which one of them approached the others and was like, guys, I have an idea, hear me out. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that conversation, because if it was Manilow, that would be hilarious. But if it was one of the writers bringing that to him, I would have also loved to hear that. So that's probably the biggest thing I would want to know about this song. Who originally had the idea to sort of take the concept of the commercial duet hit and just flip it on its head? I would be really interested to know that.
I think that was probably Manilow, because I know in the way he's spoken about his writing with his collaborators, a lot of times he comes to them and gives them some ideas for songs or what he wants to sing about. So something tells me that he sat down with Bruce and Jack and told them what he wanted to write. And the one final note I just wanted to mention for this song, we do not have a credited bass player on this record, and I want to, on the record, take a guess as to who I think played the bass. I think it is Will Lee. It really sounds like his playing, and I would be incredibly surprised if evidence came forward that was not correct.
Well, I think our viewers that have followed us the past few episodes know what I'm about to say. Tell us in our email if you know who the bass player is on this specific cut. Now, we talked about Only in Chicago and the last duet being kind of wacky arrangements. Here we have a trilogy here we're completing. Track 9 with another wacky arrangement. This is track 9, London, written once again by the Dream Team, if that's what we want to start calling them on the show. Barry Manilow, Bruce Sussman, and Jack Feldman. This is a very interesting track for a multitude of reasons. The first thing I'm going to point out is the intro. Very different coming out of the last duet. It's very different. This almost feels kind of Paradise Cafe. I mentioned that on the Even Now episode with I Was a Fool. Just this intro of him just singing this jazzy melody. It's very Paradise Cafe at the beginning. And I wanted to, this isn't necessarily a through connection, but just a similarity between this song and Only in Chicago. Some very out-of-pocket chord changes. Some things that you aren't expecting are going to happen in Only in Chicago and this song. So Barry, talk a bit about kind of the unorthodox music part of this song. That was a terrible way to phrase it, but talk about the music of this song.
Well, so I think this, like we were saying, all the tracks past the first three were buried for a while, so they are hidden gems. This song, London, to me, is a masterpiece because it has a beautiful song that has a wrap around with New York winter, a very slow, as you said, a very jazzy kind of sound, and then it kicks into to a faster tempo, and then tells the story of what happened in London and the pen pal, the love that was left behind in London. And I think this was a very personal lyric for Manilow to sing, because what was happening at the time was his star was exploding in the United Kingdom. The reception he received there was unlike anything he had ever received before, and his popularity just continued to be on the grow. So I think that this was a very personal, deeply held love for the goodwill he was shown by the London audiences, and a way of saying how much he missed them when he wasn't with them. But what I really am attracted to in this song is the complexity of the rhythm changes. It's very Burt Bacharach esque.
I can see that, yeah.
Because to give a concept, most music that you listen to is 4-4 timing. It's every beat is 1, 2, 3, 4. Like at the Copacabana. You know, it's just 4 beats to the measure. That's almost everything. But this is not that. The chorus is London 3-4. What were we scared of? Bought it. I run from London. I dropped the beat there, so there were only 7 beats to the bar. So you basically had a bar of 3 and a bar of 4. What happened in that, a beat is dropped out. And that's why if you're listening to it and it feels different, it feels like there's a push and a pull, that's what's happening, is there's this odd time signature that just shows up. And Burt Bacharach was famous for using that in his popular songs, like I Say a Little Prayer for You. It's like, forever and ever and ever will be, and I will love you forever. It's not straightforward. And so you really have to be paying attention if you're a musician. It throws you for a second, and you got to try to chart it out and figure out what's going on here. So I like that. And I love that the instrumental part. I'm a sucker for these instrumental jams and instrumental solos, and you even have a bass solo, which
you
is
have
something.
A Will Lee bass break at 3 minutes and 11 seconds in. I made it a point to write that down because that caught me so off guard. And what I wanted to mention was, at this point in the album, this is the first weird time signature change that has happened up to this point in the album. So this is a very, there's a lot to unpack in this song. And it's so late on the album, I can't help but wonder how many people would love this song, but they've never heard it.
I agree. I think many people owe it to themselves. If they have never heard of this song, London, they need to go listen to it now.
So, yeah, at some point in our series, we're going to talk about, he played it live a handful of times. He's only ever played it in the UK. I've never heard of him doing it in the USA. I mean, it wouldn't really make a ton of sense if he did. Going back to Only in Chicago, I've seen that he has played that live.
Yeah, my mom was there for that. That was actually the very first Barry Manilow convention that opened the Hot Tonight tour in 1983. Yeah, and my mom was there for the convention, and she was there for that performance. And that was a great show, because I watched it on Manilow TV. And yeah, that was one of the rare performances of Only in Chicago. Actually, to quickly throw back to Only in Chicago, it was invoked once on the 2000 tour, because Manilow started to sing the song My Kind of Town, Chicago Is by Frank Sinatra, and he'd hold that last note, My Kind of Town. And when he did the tour in 2000, when he hit that last note, My Kind of Town, Chicago, Chicago, Yeah, so wow. He threw back to that in 2000. So, yeah, so it, these songs are alive and well in the Manilow universe. But going back to London here, this is one that I think the last time I've ever heard of it being performed was a snippet of it was performed in 1996 on the World Tour. I've seen that on Manilow TV. But I don't think this has ever been done since then. But this is one that I think could be worth figuring out a way to pull this out. Maybe you would have to do this for a maybe United Kingdom specific audience, maybe, but I love it and I'm not from the United Kingdom.
All right, yeah, that's such, it's such a great track. I love it so much. I wish you would bring it back in some form, but I know I'll probably never hear it because I'm probably never going to go to London. So from here, let's move on to the final track on the regular released track list of this album. It's an interesting cut here. It's called We Still Have Time. Here's another Dream Team song, Manilow, Sussman, and Feldman. This is from the Motion Picture Tribute. Barry, take it away on this track.
Yes, so my father actually went into the theaters to see the film, and it is used at the end of the film. It's a movie that starred Jack Lemmon, and it is about a father who is estranged from his son, and he learns he has a terminal illness, and he decides to make an effort to reconnect with his son. So that this is remarkable in that this is the first time Barry Manilow ever wrote for a film. Now, he did Ready to Take a Chance again, but he did not write this one. This was the first time he wrote for a film. And he really had an intention in his career, especially starting in the late 70s, that he would like to have a career to be involved in movies, whether writing, singing, or even acting. And that was something he got very serious about. So this was one of those doors into that world where he actually composed a song for an actual film that would be featured and mentioned prominently. He's mentioned on the, you know, all of the advertisements, you know, a new featuring a new song by Barry Manilow. And it really tugs at your heartstrings, this song. Sometimes you have to go for the Kleenex when you listen to this particular song. But when you listen to it, one thing that strikes me is the harmonica. Now, let's talk about that for a second. The harmonica. When you name the most famous harmonica players, the most well-recorded harmonica players, I can count on one hand those artists. So any harmonicas you hear out in the world of popular music or even soundtracks, there's just a handful of people producing that sound. One of them is obviously Stevie Wonder, and he was featured on a bunch of records playing it. He's one of the greatest harmonica players in the world. There's also Toots Thielemann, who is known for doing the Sesame Street theme song, but also Leave a Tender Moment Alone by Billy Joel. And finally, there's Tommy Morgan on harmonica, and he plays on this. He played from, I believe, the 1960s. He was a part of the Phil Spector Wrecking Crew, I think. I think he worked with Phil Spector, but I know for a fact he did work with Brian Wilson because he plays the harmonica on Good Vibrations. That's Tommy Morgan.
Oh, wow.
And to really flash forward in the discography, if you hear the song Just Remember, as included on the Complete Collection and then some, it was a live performance from the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and in the middle, the bridge, there is a harmonica solo, and Barry Manilow says, Tommy Morgan on harmonica. And so with that, this is Tommy Morgan. I believe it's his first appearance on a Manilow record, and he continued to appear on many Manilow records, including A Christmas Gift of Love on I'll Be Home for Christmas. But these players, these session musicians, they just did nothing but play sessions, and they played pretty much all of them because they are reliable, and they sounded great. They were worth their rate because you knew you were going to get a great take out of these musicians. So I bet for someone like Manilow, it was a thrill to welcome a real legend onto the track. And of course, it sounds really beautiful. And again, going back to that country feeling, the lead into country, that prominent harmonica really gives you that feeling. Again, it's not country. We're not putting on the cowboy hat here. But this is, I think, the third song in the album that contributes to that lean into the country elements, and it's a really beautiful song, and I think it's been, I feel it's been forgotten, and I don't think it should be.
I had never heard of the movie until this album, listening to this album. So I don't know how big a success the movie was, but obviously that would probably have something to do with the song not being very well remembered, because we talked about the first three tracks were the singles. Everything else was forgotten. So not only is it at the end of an album where the second half is really not remembered very well, but was the movie very popular?
You know, I don't think it endured. I don't know the exact box office gross, but it was not a runaway smash. Like, I'll put it this way. In 1980, a movie like Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back came out. We all know what that is. We've all seen it. I mean, I think most people here listening have seen it. Tribute, I bet hardly anybody's seen it. I think you might have seen it at the time if you were alive in 1980 and old enough to go to the movies, but that doesn't play on TV. I don't think there was a DVD release. I don't think it's streaming anywhere, so therefore, it's going to be forgotten. And will it be one of those movies that is rediscovered and is a lost classic? I'll be honest, I don't know, because I really haven't seen the film, so I don't know. But who knows? Maybe one day this will show up on TikTok and start trending. I don't know.
Because I would like to see it, but with that, I think we are done with the official track list of the album. There's just a small handful of tracks we still have left to discuss. As we mentioned, there are some outtakes that didn't make the final cut. Let's talk about those right now. Here we go. The first one we're going to talk about is a track called Gold Digger. It was written by the Dream Team, Barry Manilow, Bruce Sussman, and Jack Feldman. I'm telling you, the first time I listened to this song in the context of, oh, this was an outtake from this album, I thought to myself, this is a totally different vibe. I could see why it didn't make the final cut. It is a totally different vibe. Talk about your feelings on this track.
Yeah, so this came out on a QVC bonus disc that was used to promote some of his releases in the 2000s. And so, well, actually, I should say, first it was released on his website. So in the 2000s, Manilow started releasing, I believe it was on a monthly or bi-monthly basis, that he would put one song from the vault on his website. And this Gold Digger song was at one point featured on his website, and then it was later included in a CD bonus disc, and so it got a more official release. And I love these background vocals. I love the tempo of it. It's such a great song. However, I agree, it just doesn't fit the feel of the Denim album, the Barry album. So I could understand why this didn't make it, but deserved a second listen all these years later.
So here was my thought on it. I was thinking, okay, I don't really think this fits the vibe of the Denim album. So I started thinking, what album would it fit the vibe of from this time period? And the closest I could come was maybe One Voice. Maybe, but even then I wasn't fully sold on that. So this song is kind of in a vibe and sound of its own, which I thought was interesting considering it was put on the shelf and never talked about. And speaking of, is that good? Are we good to move on? Speaking of songs that nobody talks about and that have a totally different vibe, we mentioned earlier Friend of the Devil. I'm going to go a little out of order here on our list because my list is out of order. But Friend of the Devil is a very interesting track. It was written by Manilow and Adrian Anderson, which is a name that is going to pop up all over this stuff in this show. What I want to talk about is this. Make sure my keyboard's up. It's this. That riff right there. This interval right here. That is the tritone.
Yes.
That is also known as the devil's interval, just because it sounds so evil. Because typically, you hear this, which is like, you know, the here comes the bride, that sort of sound. And we mentioned Star Wars, when you hear the fifth, it's this. You know, so this is just such an evil-sounding interval. And he really utilizes this in the song, and I think that's on purpose because it's the devil's interval, and the song is called Friend of the Devil. So, Barry, you got so excited right there. What do you think of this song?
I knew the tritone was the devil's chord, but it did not occur to me. But you're totally right. It was so deliberate. And see, that's exactly how we were talking about this. See, Matelot uses techniques and finds the perfect way to bring them into the song. But what I wanted to note about this particular song, I made this comment earlier when we were talking about Dance Away. I think this at one point was slated to close side one of the album, and in the particular recording that had come out in the 2000s, it kind of has a bit of an abrupt ending. I actually think it might have been intended to repeat and fade, and that would have made perfect sense if that faded out and that was the end of side one. So if you take out Dance Away and you listen to the old album and you substitute that, I think that makes sense. But again, I could be completely wrong about that.
Got the hat on, of course.
Yeah. But one thing I also note, and a reason why this didn't come out. So Matelot made a comment on this. He wrote in the note that accompanied Fred of the Devil is that it was just not the right time to do such a drastic change to his style. That was the reason why it was not commercially released. And so I totally understand that. But the other thing I observed is that from 79 to 1980, there was a string of nothing but angry and vengeful songs, which he made a section into his 1980 show. It seems like he was writing a lot of songs in that vein. Who's Been Sleeping in My Bed is probably the greatest example of that. But with Gold Digger, which we just talked about, In Front of the Devil, it's clear that that was a theme he kept writing on, but ultimately decided to not keep releasing songs like that. And I think that's kind of what we do as artists. We explore, but sometimes in terms of what we do publish could be totally different. And so this is an example of that. It's a great song. I'm glad that we finally had the chance to hear it, because this last note is absolutely, the arrangement is epic, but it leads and crescendos to this very, very big last note. It's one of the most dramatic and biggest belts and longest belts that I think we have of Matelot on record. It's great.
So I wanted to mention that this sound, I could see why maybe it was taken off, because it sounds so different from the rest. Because again, already with the interval right there, that's already sounding different. That's this, we were talking about Lonely Together and Life Will Go On. So reassuring and calming and just, you know, connecting people. And then boom, you've got the devil popping out right at you.
Yeah.
Like one song right before you're supposed to be calm. So I can see why he said it was this drastic change in sound and style, and they didn't feel it was appropriate for this album. I could agree with that. But again, I'm like you. I'm so glad we were able to hear it. Now, let's talk about our third and final outtake. That's what we'll call it. This is a song called Holding Out for You. This is a Marty Panzer lyric, music by Barry Manilow. The biggest thing I wanted to draw attention to with this track is, it reminds me of Lonely Together. Barry, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have the same idea?
I do have the same idea. That's exactly what I thought when I listened to this. And so, going back to what I was saying about Friend of the Devil, I think that Holding Out for You was maybe considered to be the opener of the album. And so, I would say that's not an unusual or strange technique for an artist to maybe record several songs that are similar and then pick a song that of those songs that feels like the right fit for the album. Not necessarily what is the greatest song, but which one is the most appropriate fit for the album. And another example that to take, there was a song called Where I Want to Be. It was used as a bonus track on the One Voice album. I think it was actually from the This One's For You sessions, just judging by the way the piano sounds. And I think it sounds like that was done in the same session as Looks Like We Made It. They both were similar sounding songs, but of course there's only room for one song that sounds like that. And I think that was the case here. You have Lonely Together, you have Holding Out for You, and so they have a similar sound with that Fender Rhodes sound and another, you know, love song. And I think the fact, like I said, that Clive would like to promote a really good single, an outside song, I think that would make Lonely Together win out. But again, we are assuming that that was the debate that was had. We don't know at what point this was considered. Was it very seriously considered for a track sequencing? We don't know that answer. But what we do know is it was pretty much fully baked, fully recorded, and decided that it didn't fit the album. So I think at the end of the day, I think Hold It Out For You is a really, really beautiful, nice song. I think at the end of the day, Lonely Together, I think was the best choice to open the album. I think for this type of song, Lonely Together was the right choice.
I think it was, too. I just wanted to make mention that out of these three outtakes we've discussed, this one felt the most, I don't want to say normal, but it felt the most Manilow of the three, at least when you consider the context of the time period it was constructed in. I think this one, out of the three, had the best shot of ending up on the album and not feeling out of place.
Yes, it would have been perfectly in place if it was.
So, I think we're good.
That's right.
All right, so we have officially finished talking about all the tracks. Now what we're going to do, we're just going to go through and we're going to talk about some of our favorite tracks, you know, why they're our favorite, not spend too much time on it because this is already insanely long. So, Barry, give me two or three of your favorite cuts from this record.
Okay, number one, London. Has to be London. It's such an adventure. I love it. Only in Chicago, another great adventure song. My third favorite is I Made It Through the Rain, of course, because it's a great song about hope. It's a perennial mainstay of the show. It's been in the show and has stayed there ever since, with that one exception at Radio City Music Hall that I forgot about. But the one thing I want to point out is there's a Madelow TV episode from the very day that this Barry album came out, and Madelow commented in the letter that accompanied the concert was how weird it is to play and just have silence. When now, if he started to do that, everybody would be applauding and standing up. Yeah, but
yep.
kind of eerie to see where it all started. And it's a great song, and of course, it rightfully deserves its place in the immediate forefront when you think of Barry Manilow's songs. I Made It Through the Rain is definitely one of the top ones for a very good reason.
Okay, so here are my favorites here. I have to go with Life Will Go On. That's near the top of my list. That's been a favorite ever since I heard it, and I've just always loved playing it. I always love listening to it. I never skip it when it comes on. Only in Chicago, I think, is going to be my second favorite on this. Again, these aren't in order. These are just, you know, the overall favorites. Only in Chicago, just because I love how wacky it is. I love how it comes out of nowhere with all of its craziness, and I just, again, when it comes on, I can't skip it. I have to listen to the whole thing. And my last favorite of the record is Lonely Together. It's just a beauty. I remember when a few years ago, I had a resurgence in my love for Barry Manilow. That was at the top of my list of favorite tracks as I was taking my first real dive into the discography. That was one of my biggest favorites. So there are our biggest favorites. Let us know on our social media or our email what your favorites are. We'd love to hear your input. Now, Barry, we've hit a moment that I have come to really look forward to on this show. Please, what is about to happen?
Okay, so we have decided that we are going to choose an MVP of the album. We are going to choose one person who somehow contributed to the album, and there only is one rule: the MVP of the album cannot go to Barry Manilow. And so, because obviously he would be the MVP of every album, and yes, that's absolutely true. But in this case, we're going to award it to somebody else. And I'm actually going to tell you something interesting, Logan. I had a thought about who I was going to go with, but after our discussion, I've changed my vote. So,
whoa.
So this is funny because when we're talking about this and you're watching this in real time, Logan and I we talk about a lot of these things, but there's a lot in the program that we do not talk about, that we let yes. ourselves hear for the first time. And I personally felt I changed my point of view a little bit after hearing Logan talk. So now I've got it written down. Okay. Let's. Are you ready, Logan? Do you have your?
I'm ready. I think we're going to be different this time.
Okay. Let's see what we come up with. Okay. So on three, we're going to show it to the camera, and we're going to see what we picked. On three, ready? 1, 2, 3. You know what? I was thinking Artie too. Artie was a possibility. All right. So why don't you talk about yours?
So the reason I'm going to talk about Artie Butler is, I'm looking at his credits on the album here. I've got my track list here just so I don't get these numbers wrong. He played the Calliope on track one, which I think is one of the most memorable moments from this record, so that contributed to this answer as well. He arranged the rhythm tracks for Lonely Together, Life Will Go On, and We Still Have Time, three absolutely beautiful tracks. He did horn and string arrangements for a plethora of tracks on this album. I mean, Lonely Together, Bermuda Triangle, Life Will Go On, the last duet, We Still Have Time, and he played Fender Rhodes on Life Will Go On too. So he had so much involvement on so many of the standout tracks for me. I had to give it to Artie Butler. Bruce and Jack, give me your reasoning.
Yeah, well, first I'll say Artie Butler was a great choice as well. He was on my mind in considering this. But I switched to Bruce and Jack after going through it, realizing just how much of the lyrics they contributed and how they brought such diversity to their writing assignments. They're writing about Bermuda. They're writing about London. They're writing for a film. And to me, it just made me think, well, that is such an important contribution to this record. So I think they deserve the title on this one. Not because that they dominated the record, but because that their contributions were so varied and what they were cooking up. So, again, Bruce and Jack contributed a lot to this record. And when I give it MVP, I try to give it to somebody that I think if they weren't here, this album would not have been what it was. And it definitely would not have been what it was without those great, great lyrics. And so, well earned. But good choice on your part, too. I think there was maybe not a clear-cut choice. Yeah. I think, like, even now, the first episode we did, we both matched on Marty Panzer was our MVP for Even Now. I expected we were going to match on that. This one, I felt more like this was a complete toss-up. There's a lot of people that we could make a good case for, like, say, James Jewellis and Kevin DeSimone, his background vocals, who appear for the first time on this record and really add a lot to the sound. So a lot of honorable mentions to go around here, but this is exciting because us talking about these records, I evolve my perspective, I evolve my thinking, and I'm so glad we got to talk about this. I mean, I'm glad I got to finally talk about this album with somebody who's just as interested in this album as I have, because, like we've said, a lot of people aren't familiar with this record, so it's hard to have a conversation. So I've enjoyed this conversation very much.
I have, and if you have enjoyed watching this conversation and listening to our speculations and theories and ramblings, we hope you'll find us on social media. We're at the Manilow Method at every social media, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. We're here on YouTube. Subscribe on YouTube. If you're just listening to the podcast, find us on YouTube so you can see what we look like. And then we have an email address that we really encourage you to reach out to. We really encourage you to send us your stories. If you've met Manilow, if you've seen him in concert, what songs have you heard live? Just give us your stories and your memories if the music and the man himself have impacted you in any way. So, Barry, tell everybody who's new here how this show works.
Yes. So every time that we are in season, which we're in season now, we're releasing new album discussion episodes, we are always going to bring you content every Monday and Friday. So that's why you need to subscribe and put the bell on alerts for notifications on YouTube so you can see when we have a new video coming to you. The first and third Mondays of the month will always be Manilow Mondays. That means a brand new album discussion episode is going to drop. Then, once we release that album discussion as we have today, this week, coming up on Friday of this week, Logan is going to release a cover song from the album we just discussed, which is the Denim Barry album. Then coming up next week on Monday, I will be releasing my own cover of a song from this album, the 1980 Barry album. And then next Friday, Logan and I are going to be releasing a cover of a song from this album. So you have to tune in to find out which songs we decided to do.
We're never going to publish what songs we do, so be sure you're subscribed, you follow us online, be sure to connect with us any way you can. We hope you enjoyed our discussion, our rather long discussion of the Barry album from 1980, and we can't wait to dive into more of the Manilow discography in the coming weeks, and we hope you'll join us on our next album discussion. It's something we should talk about. We will see you next time on the Manilow Method.
After taping the episode that you just watched, we received a gift here at the Manilow Method, and we can show it to you. By the way, I want to give a shout out to my friend Brent from California. He's the one who got this album for me, and he didn't even know that we had taped an album discussion on this very album. So that was entirely serendipitous. This is a Japanese pressing of the Barry Denham album, complete with an obi strip. An obi strip is the name for that thing off to the side that has all the writing in Japanese. But the Japanese pressing of the Barry Denham album also contains a personal letter from Barry Manilow. I'll read it to you. Dear friends, I'm very much looking forward to going to Japan and hope to see you soon. Love, Barry Manilow. Of course, Barry Manilow did make it to Japan for the first time in 1983, and he found so many adoring fans that were so excited to greet him and welcome him to their country. And there are some great television specials that were taped in Japan that were absolutely amazing concerts. So there you have it, a very special piece of Barry Manilow history.
Hey everybody, we hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Manilow Method with me, Logan Allen, and my co-host, Mr. Barry Harris. Before we go, I just want to make a brief plug for the Manilow Music Project. For those of you who don't know what that is Dr. Manilow's nonprofit organization that donates funds, equipment, instruments to schools' music programs that can't necessarily afford them. They're a great project with a great mission, and we highly recommend you check them out. You can find them at Manilow Music Project on social medias and at manilowmusicproject.org online. You can donate there and learn all sorts of other information. One more thing, our brief theme music that you hear at the beginning of every episode is based on Frédéric Chopin's Prelude in C minor. It was performed by my co-host, Barry Harris, and for those of you who are really in the know about Barry Manilow music, that is what Could It Be Magic is based off of, that prelude in C minor. So one last thing, thank you to Barry Manilow and his band and his crew and everyone else that has helped in his success along the way, because without all of them, we would not be here celebrating this fantastic music with you. So be sure to tune in later this week on Friday when I drop a cover song from the album that we just discussed, and then Barry is going to drop one next Monday, and then we're going to drop a collaboration on one of those songs next Friday. So we've got content rolling out for you all week long. We hope you subscribe, hit the notification bell. Anytime we post a new video, you will be alerted. Thank you so much, everybody. We will see you soon on the Manilow Method.